Good morning. It's good to see everyone here this morning. If you're visiting with us this morning, David is the normal teacher of this class. He's on vacation this week, so I'll be filling in for him today. If you would go ahead and turn over to 1 John chapter 2. I thought this morning we would take a few minutes to talk about pride. I made the comment in class here before that, you know, the longer I live on this earth, it seems more and more like the whole point of this is to beat the pride out of me. We know that God detests pride. That's one of the three great temptations that's listed. If you read there in 1 John chapter 2, down in verse 16, it says, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world." So let's dig into that a little bit this morning. Remind ourselves what God thinks about pride. Think about the ways that pride shows up in our lives, whether we realize that's really coming from a place of pride or not. And then look at how we can get it out of our lives. This is one of those lessons that's as much a reminder to me as it is to anybody else. And I welcome your comments and your questions this morning as we go through this. Okay, so first of all, let's talk about what God thinks about pride. First of all, from Solomon. Solomon warned about the dangers of pride in Proverbs chapter 16, beginning there in verse 18. Proverbs 16:18 says, "Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before stumbling. It is better to be humble in spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud." This verse 18, this is one of my favorites in the Bible, and this is one that pops in my head all the time. When I'm about to do something, I think, is this going before destruction? Is what I'm doing coming out of pride? So Solomon's reminding us here, it's much better to be humble, even if that means you must associate with the lowly people of this world. That's not a concern. Then next we have Moses. We know that Moses was very meek, but God respected him for this, going so far as to speak to him plainly, which is something that's extraordinarily rare in the Bible. God spoke to him face to face. In Numbers chapter 12, beginning in verse 3, it says, "Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses, 'With Aaron and to Miriam, you three come out of the tent of meeting.' So the three of them came out." This is when there was a rebellion starting up against Moses. "Then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the doorway of the tent, and he called Aaron and Miriam when they had both come forward. He said, 'Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I shall speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household. With him I speak mouth to mouth, even openly and not in dark sayings. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant, against Moses?" So Moses' meekness as a leader was a tremendous blessing to him, and not a weakness as many in the world would see it. And then, of course, we have the example of Jesus himself. Jesus himself was humble and lowly in heart, despite his great power and deity. If anybody on the whole earth had reason to not be humble, it was Jesus, and yet he himself was while he was here. Matthew 11:28 says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Then we have Paul's warning to Timothy. So in Paul's letter to Timothy, Paul warns Timothy of various types of people he should be wary of. And notice some of the attributes that are in this list. 2 Timothy 3, verse 2 says, "For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. Avoid such men as these." Those who are proud are listed among the people that should be avoided. And you notice a number of the categories here, Paul lists here, like lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant. Those are all symptoms of the same underlying problem, which is pride. Any questions or comments so far as we go through this? All right, then we have Jesus' parable in Luke chapter 18. So here Jesus is telling a parable of the two men praying. God's perspective on what these men is based on their attitude as they're praying. So Luke 18, beginning in verse 9, says, "And he also told this parable to some people who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and was praying this to himself, 'God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all that I get.' But the tax collector, standing some distance away, was even unwilling to lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, the sinner. I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted.'" The Pharisee was not humble. Jesus' judgment on the matter is that whoever exalts himself will be humbled, either now or at the judgment. Sometimes we see that happen here on earth. Sometimes it may not happen until later on. We know that in the end, God will make it all right. But whoever humbles himself will be exalted. How much better to be humble now and exalted later on. That'll make that day so much better. And then in Philippians chapter 2, God tells us to be humble, count others as more significant. People are more willing to follow an humble leader and will be humble themselves when doing so. Jesus, of course, is the ultimate example of this. Jesus was deity, as we just mentioned, yet he humbled himself in coming in the likeness of a man and humbled himself to God's will, dying a terrible death on the cross for our sins. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interest, but also for the interest of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus. Although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. For this reason also, God highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name which is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow, and those who are in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and that every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father." We know that God instructs us to be subject to our elders and to each other, not just elders in the church, but elders, those who are older than us. Ultimately, we must humble ourselves before him. In 1 Peter chapter 5, beginning with verse 5, it says, "There, you younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders, and all of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, for God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you." Okay, so we've got an overview now of what God thinks about pride. So now let's take a moment and think about some of the ways that pride might manifest itself in our lives. And some of these are relatively obvious, I think. But pride itself can be a very deceptive thing. You can't just think that, oh, that's a problem I've solved, I've gotten over it, now I'm good. It's a very deceptive thing because you might learn to conquer it in one area and then it pops up in another area you weren't expecting. So we always have to be on the lookout for it. So let's think about some of these ways. So here are a few that I've thought of, maybe some more that will occur to you as well. First of all, the textbook definition, doing what we want and not considering God or others. I mean, that's kind of the whole thing, right? This is the definition of pride and selfishness, that the world revolves around us and what we want to do. By bragging about our own accomplishments, what have we done that we weren't able to do because of what God blessed us with? That glory really belongs to God. By refusing to do any work that we think might be beneath us, whatever that means in our particular station in life. You know, you might have a job and you start at the bottom and you get promoted a couple of times and now all of a sudden you think, well, you know, that floor needs to be swept. But I'm at this level now. I don't do that anymore. But that's not what we see in the Bible. We have the example in the Bible of Jesus washing the feet of his disciples. So if we ever have any idea that some job is beneath us, this example of Jesus should really rid us of that notion. We might be tempted to look down on others for whatever reason. Maybe it's social status or money or job or life situation, whatever it is. Maybe we think that's a good reason. It's never a good reason. That's just pride coming out. By not serving others, when we have the opportunity and means to do so. We're told over and over again throughout the entire Bible that we should love our neighbor, serve others. And so if we have the opportunity and means to do that and we just don't do it because we just don't want to do it, that's basically just pride. That's just us doing what we want to do rather than what God has told us to do. Also, being generous with our time and our money and our resources. You know, if you think about it, why did God put us here and give us those things in the first place? Was it not so that we would obey his commands and love our neighbor? We might also allow sin to creep in, thinking that in our pride that we know how to handle it. Well, it's okay that this little sin kind of creeps in because I know that I can handle it. We see some people in the Bible that had that problem. In 1 Corinthians 5, the Corinthians had this idea. 1 Corinthians 5, 2, Paul tells them, "You have become arrogant and have not mourned instead so that the one who had done this deed would be removed from your midst." The Corinthians had sin in their midst, but instead of removing it, they gloried in it. They should have dealt with that sin instead of being proud and tolerating it. And we can just as easily be guilty of that same idea ourselves. Any comments or questions before we move on? Yes, sir.
You know, I think the really big item that we have to keep in perspective, I think we all have skills and we all have accomplishments. We want to be proud of our children, our spouses. You know, we take pride in our family and all the things that happen in life. And I think everyone has something in their life, or a lot of things maybe in their lives, where, I mean, we can look at internally and go, you know, I mean, this has worked out really well. I'm in a really good spot. I have a really good job, whatever it is. I think that's fine. Mm-hmm. I think the problem comes in when we forget where it comes from.
Absolutely.
One of the things I have tried to drive home with my second child for sure is that although you may have all these things going for you, if you forget who gave them to you and how quickly they can be taken from you, you've already failed.
Absolutely.
Agreed. Because it can happen in the blink of an eye. And exactly what you're talking about just now, if sin's crept in, you've already lost. Yeah. You can't handle it. The fact that you have let sin in says or should say to you that you've already failed. And not that any of us are perfect, but the fact that it's crept in says you can't handle it.
Absolutely.
And we just have to understand and remember constantly that all these things that we have are truly gifts from God. But they're gifts from God, and they can be taken away just as quickly as they're given.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And Todd's sermon this morning, talking about the Israelites, they saw that happen. They were in a place to be blessed tremendously, and they turned against God and suffered all those consequences for a number of years before they made it right. So absolutely agree. Good point. Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
That is good, but I think we have to be very careful that in being proud of everything we've accomplished, we don't look down on others who don't meet that same standard because of life situations.
Right. Absolutely. It's very easy to do. It's a very pernicious problem. Yes, sir.
Your whole list is summarized by James in chapter 4. Ethan brought this up in the high school class, and it's a great verse for this. But it's chapter 4, 1 through 8, where it talks about what is the source of your quarrels and conflicts among you. Is it not the source of your pleasures? Is not the source of your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives so that you may spend it on your own pleasures. And it gets down to 7 and 8, talking about submit therefore to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Reading all that, I think, just totally backs up everything you're just talking about right there.
Absolutely. That's a perfect tie-in. Anything else? Yes, sir. Sorry, there's two of you right in line of people.
This might be something that people think is being technical or picky or anything like that, but when we read in the Bible the word pride, it's always used in a negative connotation in most versions. There are some versions, I think, that might use it in a positive light, but throughout the Bible, it's generally used in a negative connotation. So why don't we, instead of thinking about we're proud of what we have done, and we try to separate that pride in what we've done and keeping it honed in versus being arrogant and haughty and proud in that way, why don't we say, like God did, this is my beloved Son whom I'm well pleased. So why can we be pleased of what we've been able to accomplish, and we're blessed to be able to do that, and therefore we make, there's a direct distinction between I am proud of doing this, or I'm pleased in what I've done.
Brother Dulac?
I was going to say, some accomplishments, too, I guess we shouldn't, might evaluate and see if we should even be, glad about them, because like Paul, Hebrew of Hebrew, on and on and on, but, that didn't accomplish anything. Matter of fact, I needed to, kind of do something else. So,
exactly right. You might be proud of something that you were on the wrong track about. Later realized you shouldn't have been proud at all. Did I see another hand? Yes, sir.
I'm thinking about this. Pride seems to be completely opposed to faith. Pride is a self-sufficiency. It's a look at me thing, the me-focused thing, whereas faith is a outward trusting in God thing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think a little bit of that is kind of baked into just American society, just because of where we came from. We have that idea of, pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps, that kind of idea. And there's certainly nothing wrong with working hard and enjoying the benefits that God gives you from doing that. But I think you're exactly right that you have to look to God and not internally. Yes?
Are you James 4, 14 to 15 in a little while?
I don't think I had that one on my list.
Well, one of the things from listening to others that's coming to me in your list, when a lot of times we're either bragging about our accomplishments or we're looking down at others, we have to remember all the good gifts are coming from God. He's told us to work. He's told us what will happen if we do that. In other words, if we obey him, not that necessarily, I think sometimes we have to think we've earned it, but that blessing, the ability to do those things, it was a blessing from God. And some of us can handle certain blessings, and some of us can handle other type blessings. I think of it kind of like the talents. We have different things that we're blessed with. So to look down on others and go, well, they just didn't work hard enough in their life or whatever, I don't think that's a good thing for us to do, because we don't know what they can handle and be righteous and what we can handle and be righteous. And when we're doing things, this is where that James 4 and 14, yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. So to me, the point of this is keep it in the right perspective of, if God wills, we're going to be able to do this or that. It's not really that, I'm all this and a bag of chips. If God wills it, we'll be able to do it, and we need to turn to him, not be boastful, don't let that sin creep in, and just go do whatever it is we're told, realizing that what we're told to do generically may be all be the same from the Lord, but the talents that we have to go and do tomorrow, that's from the Lord. All that is from the Lord.
And I'm always reminded that the main problem that it seems that humans have had throughout history, and we see this all throughout the Old Testament, is prosperity. When, things are bad, your tendency is always to look to God for help. And as soon as there's prosperity, you think, I did it all myself, and you forget God. So, your words are absolutely right. And there's times in my life that I've looked back on and thought, why didn't God answer this prayer in such a way? And then later on I realized, that wouldn't have been good. I would not have handled that well if I had received that blessing. And possibly it's something he wanted to do, but saw in me that Mark's not going to handle that right. So, yeah, absolutely. Yes, sir.
I may be a little weird, but when I think of pride, I think of Mussolini with his arms crossed and his head tilted back. Every time I see Donald Trump with his arms crossed, I want to tell him to uncross his arms.
Yeah. Got to be careful with that sort of attitude. All right, let's move on here and look at some not-so-obvious ways that pride might sneak into our life. So there are kind of a number of sneaky ways, as I was thinking about this, that pride sort of shows up. And, you know, it's not something that you might immediately recognize as pride. And because we don't recognize it, we don't take the necessary steps to root out the problem. So this list will probably open up some ideas for you. Maybe you have some more ideas as we're going through here. The first one I had on my list is anxiety. This is one that I, in particular, have had trouble with in the past, just for, you know, job, money, schedules, you know, a number of different things. And we'll talk about this a little bit more in the next phase of this lesson, but, you know, we have to remember to cast our cares on God. To be anxious is to look inward for the answer instead of upward to God. Psalm 37:25. This is another one of my favorite verses. It says, I have been young and now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his descendants begging bread. So that idea of anxiety can cause us to look inward. And when we're looking inward like that, we're not loving God, we're not loving our neighbor, we're not looking out to what we should be doing. So if you are anxious about something, and I'm sure I'm not the only one here that's dealt with this, do what you can to remedy the issue, and then give the rest to God. That's all you can do. If you need help, reach out to your brethren. This room is absolutely full of people that would love to help you if this is you know, something that's a problem for you. And a lot of people here have probably already been there themselves and worked their way out of it. So don't be afraid to take advantage of your brethren's help on that. Another one is depression or nostalgia. Nostalgia kind of being the positive version of that, I guess. This one can be very tricky. It's a way of thinking that's very centered around me, and it's not centered around God, just like all of these are. But it's the idea that you're looking too much at things in the past, specifically bad things that have happened in the past. And when you're looking too much in the past, you're overlooking what you can do to serve God and others now. It's certainly good to remember the good times we've had in the past, times when God has blessed us, but it's not good to look only to the past. I've heard this described before as depression is the inverse of anxiety. So anxiety is being too concerned about things in the future. Depression is being too concerned about things in the past. And we shouldn't fall on either side of that. Both of those are wrong. We need to be concerned about what we can do for God right now. This one, I'm stepping on my own toes and probably stepping on some other toes, and you know that is what it is on this one. But overeating or poor diet, what I want to eat is more important than what is good for my body or for my health. You know, God gave us these bodies; they're incredible blessings. They're incredibly complex biological machines, and I'm sure we don't know 10% of what they're actually capable of. But it's important that we treat them well and try to keep them functioning properly so we can serve God. You know, he didn't send us here so that we could, you know, misuse these bodies and not do what he commanded us to do. So just one quick side note, and this is not kind of a health lesson or anything, but this is something that I've discovered over time, and maybe you have as well, but your palate is a little bit like your conscience. If you're always doing good things, your conscience will be really strong and will guide you correctly when you try to do something wrong. If you're always doing bad things, your conscience will get seared and those bad things seem okay. Same thing with your palate. If you're always eating junk, your palate gets used to that and you crave more junk. So take that for what it's worth. But just like your conscience, it is possible to get yourself out of that. That's something that I have also struggled with in the past. All right, greed. Greed tells us that my money and my things are the most important. Again, this is another one of those views that looks inward instead of upward to God. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5 says there, make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What will man do to me? So we know that God's going to take care of us. We don't have to have this all-consuming fear that if we give up something here, then we won't have it. We'll be destitute. That's not the way it works. We'll mention this a little bit more further on. Being late, considering your own time more important than the time of others who may be waiting for you. You know, we're all late to something sometime. That's not a big deal. It's when it's a chronic thing that's caused by you thinking what you have to do is more important than the people who may be waiting on you. That's when I think this veers into a pride issue. So if that's something you struggle with, think about why is it that you happen to always be late? Is there something you're doing that you think is important, and maybe it's not important? Or maybe you need to reshuffle things or rework your priorities. Another one, this might step on some toes, I don't know. Driving recklessly. The idea that I want to drive how I want to drive, and other people need to get out of my way, basically. But putting others in danger by driving recklessly is not showing love for your neighbor. If someone saw how you were driving and then you pulled into the church parking lot, would they be surprised that that's where you were headed? Something for us to all think about. Any comments or additions you might have to this list? Yes?
One thing I didn't see on there, and maybe I missed here, but just the whole idea of inflexibility. You know, all of us probably try to do what we think is right, make correct judgments, not necessarily religiously, but in our work and our hobbies or whatever we do what we think is best. If you're ever going to get along with a group, you have to be flexible and give in to others who may have come to a different conclusion, studying just as hard.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anything else? Okay. So on to the important part, how to get pride out of our lives. So first of all, this is a lifelong pursuit. Like I mentioned earlier, it's not something you can just conquer and write off. How nice that would be if that were true. Unfortunately, it's not true at all. I think this is one of those things that probably all of us are going to fight in some fashion or another for our entire lives. So first on the list, the two great commandments, love God first and love your neighbor. Matthew 22, beginning with verse 34, says, but when the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered themselves together. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him, teacher, what is the great commandment of the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. So God made this real simple. You know, in the Old Testament, they had hundreds and hundreds of very meticulous individual laws they had to keep in mind. Jesus made this very simple for us in the New Testament. Love the Lord, love your neighbor, and let the rest fall where it will. Trust God to provide. Part of the way that pride can sneak into our lives is the idea that I need to watch out for myself and get what is mine, because if I don't, then somehow I'm going to be destitute or lose out in some way. And now certainly we need to work to provide for ourselves, work to provide for our families. But you can go too far in that and think that if I don't go so far in this, then God's not going to provide for me. It's a lack of trust in God, basically. And it falls back into pride and anxiety. So let's read Matthew chapter 6. Starting there in verse 25. Matthew 6:25. For this reason, I say to you, do not be worried about your life, as to what you will eat or what you will drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow, nor reap, nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they? And who of you, being worried, can add a single hour to his life? And why are you worried about clothing? Observe how the lilies of the field grow. They do not toil, nor do they spin. Yet I say to you that not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, will he not much more clothe you? You have little faith. Do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing? For the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things. For your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. I heard someone once give the analogy that life is kind of like a board game. Everybody gets all the pieces out and they play the game, but when the game is over, the pieces all go back in the box. And that's a little bit how life is like here. You know, we fight and we scrabble over getting what we think we need, but at the end, you know, we're all leaving. You know, all the pieces are going back in the box. So we have to keep that right perspective. Our anxiety and our pride about what we do have might prevent us, as we talked about a minute ago, might prevent God from blessing us even more. Did I see a hand? Okay. Remember to look to God for direction, not ourselves. This is another one of my favorite verses here. Jeremiah 10:23 says, I know, O Lord, that a man's way is not in himself, nor is it in a man who walks to direct his steps. We need to look upward for our direction in life and not to ourselves. God's direction is perfect and it's unwavering. Our direction wavers constantly and it may rarely be correct. So we need to try to filter out the noise and look for what God is telling us to do. And this is one of those ways that I think helps a lot. Look for ways to help others or to serve others. Let's look at Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, beginning with verse 2, says, there bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But each one must examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone, and not in regard to another. For each one will bear his own load. The one who is taught the word is to share all good things with the one who teaches him. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of the faith. So if we're out there looking to serve others, we're putting our heart in the right place. And that goes a long way to solving the pride issue. We're both encouraging others and we're helping inoculate ourselves against this pride. Any comments so far? Okay. And remember our common struggle. Romans 3. Let's flip over in there and read that real quick. 3, verse 21. It says there, but now that apart from the law, the righteousness of God has been manifested, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, and the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ for all those who believe, for there is no distinction. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So we need to remember here that we're all in the same boat on this. We've all sinned. We're all trying to have a good relationship with God, or at least we should be. And once we get this idea in our heads properly, it should be difficult to be lifted up with pride. And finally, try to see things from God's perspective. You know, we have a very limited perspective while we're here on earth. We can only see a tiny, tiny fraction of what is actually going on. God, of course, knows all. But I think it's helpful if we try to think of what God's perspective is on something. You know, it's easy to point out others' problems, but we have to get the logs out of our own eyes first. It might be that once we do that, we'll see that we thought other people were wrong, but that's because we were the ones who were wrong. And once we solve our own problems, then we don't see the same issues in other people. We may even need the help of the person who we had been looking down on once it's all said and done. Are there any comments or questions? All right.
Yes, sir. God's perspective, that seems to do the flip for me. A lot of times, it's me, it's I. If we look at it from the way God's looking at all of us, who all sin, we're all deserving of eternal punishment from Him. But due to His grace, His mercy, and His love for us, that's not what we have to face. And in turning that back, if we realize how God has done us, then why aren't we doing that to others? Why aren't we treating our possessions that way, knowing that God gave us all these things despite how despicable our sin is in His eyes that we chose to do?
Like if you're a parent and you have two young kids and you give them a toy to play with and they fight. Yes, you know how much grander is that when looking from God's perspective? Yes.
37 sums that everything up just so nicely, because just the entire chapter is just so reassuring to read, because it takes everything that we're saying here and just puts it in a chapter, just like you trust in the Lord and trust what He has planned for you.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of my favorites. Yes.
I had a comment. I think. Did you have a comment?
Oh. Matthew 5 and 3, talking about the blessed are the poor in spirit. That means that we're totally dependent on God for everything, that we are nothing basically without God. So if we're not looking at it from that standpoint, then pride will take care of it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, being poor in spirit, that's exactly the right idea there. Yep.
God's perspective on pride, and I saw it. In Proverbs chapter 16, verse 5, which I don't think you brought up yet, but it says, everyone who is arrogant in heart, which is the same thing as pride, is an abomination to the Lord. And it says to be assured, this is God, like this is God's perspective, that He will not go unpunished. And I think pride keeps us from fulfilling the greatest commandment and the second greatest commandment, and that's love God and loving your neighbor. Pride will prevent us from fulfilling those commandments.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It kind of puts up a shield around us. It's kind of mirrored on the inside, where we can only see ourselves and we can't see outside. And yeah, I think you're exactly right. Anything else? All right. Well, I'm out of notes, so yes, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you. The whole irony of this whole thing is you have to have humility to recognize your own pride. that's half the battle right there, is just being willing to be able to see it and admit it. Then we can get on to this part. It's so hard just to see it in yourself. My sister one time was getting on to one of her children, and the child just kept coming back with more responses, and she just kept saying, "You got pride in your eyes. You got pride in your eyes. Every answer you're saying has pride in it." But she couldn't see it. And so sometimes we need others to help us to see that with love, because we can't see it for ourselves.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when I was building out this lesson, that's part of the reason I put in some of these sneaky things, because I was thinking through there. It's like, you know, I've done that, and that was... When I get down to it, that was really pride, and I didn't realize it. And you know, you're exactly right. You have to have that humility, which makes me worried about how many things I'm still not seeing in myself. Yes, sir.
Another thing that makes it more complicated is we often think that our success is a blessing from God, but that might not be the case. That might be what the devil knows that we can't handle. So we need to be very careful about what we think is successful. When we look over the past year,
did we gain financial success? Have we gained professional success? Have we gained spiritual success? Have we saved some souls? Or has our earthly growth hurt our efforts, our spiritual efforts to save souls? So oftentimes we might think, oh, I'm being very blessed by God right now. But it might be the exact opposite. It might be the devil giving you exactly what he knows that you need to let those souls walk past you.
Yeah, that's a good point and a scary point. Something to keep in mind. Okay. Yes, sir.
I would suggest also that we be careful that we don't consider everything that we do as being prideful. For example, I enjoy your drawings, but I haven't seen them a while on Facebook.
Well, thank you for that.
I wouldn't consider that prideful, because you show your drawings.
Yeah, well, and there's, you know, on a lot of these things that we talked about, there's a lane in the middle where all these things are fine. It's when you get out on the shoulder of the road, it starts veering into pride. We start going too far one way or the other, that kind of thing. All right. Well, I appreciate your comments, your attention. I think we'll cut it off there.